my description of my prison visit, but I didn't make up anything. I was beginning to think I should because Betty was looking pretty disappointed. She kept tapping her forehead with the eraser on her pen and saying, "So you didn't really discuss anything of substance?" And she kept asking me why I thought the sunflower fields outside the prison bothered me, and I kept saying, "I don't know."
"When are you planning on seeing her again?"
"I don't know," I said.
"You are planning on it, aren't you? This was a very big step for you, Harley. You need to keep moving forward."
I needed to keep looking out the window. I was glad Betty's office was at the back of the building instead of the front, where the view would have been the Eaton Park. The parking lot wasn't much to look at, but the maples bordering it were nice. They were covered with bright, new leaves now, and drooping with seed helicopters.
"Are you sure you don't want to take off your coat?" she asked me.
"I'm sure," I said. She sighed and crossed her legs and looked at her notes. She started tapping her forehead while tapping one toe in the air. I noticed her shoes. They weren't her usual scuffed black pumps that gapped at the sides when she walked. These were a soft silver green, like the wrong side of a leaf. Not a mark on them, not even on the soles. They didn't go at all with the coarse, putty-colored dress she was wearing. It wasn't just the color that was wrong. I thought of Cinderella finding herself in rags again, with one glass slipper still sparkling on her foot. Betty saw me looking at her shoes, uncrossed her legs, and tucked her feet under her chair like she was concealing an accident.
"Let's go back to the comment you made about feeling that your mother is more concerned about the girls than she is about you. Why do you think that's true?"
"I know it's true," I corrected her.
"Then why is that? Why is she more concerned about them?"
"Because they're girls."
"Why should that matter?"
"Parents are always more concerned about daughters than sons."
"Let's not generalize. Why is your mother more concerned about your sisters than she is about you?"
"There's more to be concerned about," I said.
"Such as?"
"They can get pregnant." She raised her eyebrows at me. "Not all of them right now," I added, frustrated.
"Your sister's getting pregnant is something you worry about?"
"No."
"It's something you think your mother worries about?"
I slumped down on the couch while trying to think of an answer I could give her that she couldn't respond to with another question. I finally gave up. "No, it's just a fact."
"Okay," she nodded. "And what else is there to be concerned about?"
"They can get hurt easier."
"Do you mean physically or emotionally?"
"Both, I guess."
"You think Amber's feelings get hurt easier than yours?"
I could barely keep my eyes open and my stomach kept growling. I was getting the egg roll for myself today. Screw Misty.
"Amber doesn't have any feelings," I said. "Then you're not making sense."
She waited for me to say something, and I didn't. She started messing with her dress. It went all the way down to her knees, covering her thighs. I thought about complimenting her so she might start wearing longer ones all the time. But I had never said anything remotely nice to the woman, and she probably would have thought I was having another breakthrough and run off to get me more water.
"Let's get back to your mother and what you were saying earlier about how comfortable she seemed in the hug room. You denied that this bothered you, but it seemed to me that it did bother you. Why? Shouldn't you be happy that your mother is coping well?"
I didn't want to talk about Mom anymore, but not talking about anything never worked at getting Betty off my back. I threw out a different topic, hoping to take her mind off Mom the same way the ketchup-stained end of a bun made Elvis forget about the hot dog he didn't get. "Parents do worry more about daughters than sons just because they can get pregnant," I insisted roughly.
"That might be true in some cases," she allowed.
"Why don't we talk about this some more after we finish talking about..."
"It's true in all cases," I pushed.
"Well, I don't know about that."
"It is."
"It's true a girl can get pregnant, but it takes a boy to get her that way. Don't you think parents worry about their sons being sexually active too?"
"It's not the same thing."
"Why not?"
"A guy can walk away from it."
"A girl can have an abortion."
"It's not the same thing."
"What would you do if you got a girl pregnant?" I wiggled my toes around inside my boots. I was going to have to break down and start wearing gym shoes. My feet were roasting.
Marry her? I said. That's interesting.
Why?
Because you answered so quickly and so confidently, yet you don't know anything about the circumstances. For instance, what if you didn't like the girl very much?
I had sex with her, right?
Yes. So you're saying you would only have sex with a girl you liked?
If she would have sex with me, I would like her.
Harley.
She laughed, and her nickel-plated hair shimmered a little. I turned back to the window, disgusted and embarrassed. I was serious.
All right, she said. What if you didn't love her?
She was starting to piss me off. I wondered if I should take her low opinion of me personally, or if it was only something else she had read in a book. Teenagers have no morals and will fuck anyone. Someday I wanted to visit her real office and go through those books. I was willing to bet I could find everything stupid and mean she had ever said to me written down in one of them. I bet she had hundreds.
What if a wife and child would interfere with your plans for the future?
She kept at me.
What if you had no source of income?
If I got her pregnant, I burst out angrily, it would mean I was being stupid. I snapped my mouth shut and went back to staring out the window, but I could feel her staring at me. I knew she was going to ask me why. Why? Why would it mean you were being stupid? Why do you feel that way? Why do you think your mother shot your father? Why do you think your father didn't like you?
There's no excuse for it, I answered her before she could ask me to explain. You know it can happen unless you do something about it. I have no sympathy for people who get accidentally pregnant. They're all idiots, just like that idiot woman who sued McDonald's because she burned herself with their coffee.
Some people don't think that woman was an idiot. She won a lot of money.
Yeah, I know, and OJ's walking around. All that proves is the courts are fucked. What I'm talking about is people being responsible for their own fuck-ups.
I didn't usually say the F-word around Betty. I could tell it bothered her, and she wasn't sure what to do about it. Give me water, offer me a Kleenex, pat my hand. She'd tried patting my hand once. I had been talking about getting rid of the dogs and started to cry. It was the only time I had ever cried around her. I remember her old hand feeling cool and dry, and I liked her touch for a split second, but then I felt more hatred for her than I had ever felt for anyone in my life. I jerked my hand away and went running out. I stayed away for 2 appointments after that, even after I realized the reason I hated her was because I didn't hate her. She made a fist and coughed into it.
So you would marry her out of responsibility?
She asked me.
I guess so. Could I go so far as to say you would marry her as a form of self-punishment?
I guess.
Do you hear what you're saying, Harley? You would commit yourself to another human being for the rest of your life as a form of punishment. Do you think that's what a marriage should be based on?
I don't know.
You don't know?
She leaned back in her chair and glanced at the untouched styrofoam cup of water sitting on the table next to the Kleenex and my ready-mix cap.
What about your parents? She asked. They were married because your mother got pregnant, and they were very young. Were they stupid?
Yes.
Yet despite feeling this way, you would intentionally do the same thing if you got a girl pregnant?
Yes. She looked at me with her young eyes and her old face, and I looked away. She was trying to figure me out. That always made me nervous as hell. I preferred it when she stuck to her job, which as far as I could tell was getting me to talk mindlessly about myself.
Did your parents have a good marriage, in your opinion?
I had to hand it to her. Not many people could ask that question with a straight face.
I thought so. She nodded again. What made you think that?
I gave the question a lot of thought. I didn't know why. I usually said the first thing that came into my head.
They got along well, I answered. They liked each other.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't paw each other or write love letters or anything like that.
How could you tell they liked each other?
Well, Mom almost always went out to the truck to meet him when he came home, even though she knew he was coming straight in the house anyway. And she would touch him all over. Not grope him or anything like that. It was more like
the way moms touch their kids when they find them after they lose them in a store. What about your father? How did he act toward your mother that made you think he liked her? I thought some more.
Well, when Mom talked about her day while she fixed dinner, Dad had this way of closing his eyes and making his whole face look peaceful.
Kind of like he was listening to a poem. Except he would hate listening to a poem, but that's the way it made me feel. Betty smiled.
That's one of the few things you've ever said about your father that makes him sound human to me.
What do you mean?
You've always described him as if he were a cartoon villain, a type of person, not a person. It's a very common way for abused children to describe their abusive parents. They see them as monsters or saints.
He was a type, I said suspiciously.
You don't think he was more complicated than he appeared on the surface?
Define complicated.
Having a variety of emotional and psychological factors influence a reaction to a situation, unlike a dumb animal who responds purely to physical stimuli and instinct.
The second one, I said, getting annoyed. That was my dad.
What about what you just described to me?
Forget it.
Did you like your father, Harley?
Every couple months she asked me this same question, and I always answered it the same way. I didn't know him well enough to know if I liked him.
Your gut reaction to him?
He was a swell guy.
You respected him, though, didn't you?
I shrugged. He did everything he was supposed to, I said. She raised her eyebrows at me.
Including beating his children? Was he supposed to do that?
He thought he was.
Good, she said firmly. What makes you think that?
I don't want to talk about my dad, I said flatly, and went back to staring out the window. She gave me a little time to stew, then got out of her chair and walked over to the old gray metal desk even principal offices had abandoned years ago. She opened her chocolatey leather-bound planner and touched her finger lightly to something and closed it again. I asked her once where she got the date book from because it looked a cut above what Hallmark sold at the mall. She had looked a little startled at my question, then explained she bought it out of town and that sometimes a person needed to splurge on herself.
Have you given any more thought to visiting your friend Skip? She asked, still standing.
I just bought new underwear, I said.
I'm afraid I don't see the connection.
I'm so strapped for cash, buying underwear is a big deal. She still didn't get it. I can't afford it, I explained further. I'd need gas money and money for food and beer and shit. I don't have it.
I see, she said, even though I knew she didn't.
Then I noticed her hand resting on the cover of the date book. She probably thought I should splurge.
I haven't asked about your financial situation in a while. How are things going? Certainly your father's estate is through probate by now.
My father's estate. That cracked me up. I was wearing my father's estate. I told you before, all he had was some life insurance through his job. The government took a third and the rest went to back taxes on the house. Mom's lawyer. The funeral home. My voice died before I could finish the list. The cost of funerals had been as big a shock to me as the cost of dog food. I decided I'd had enough. I reached for my cap sitting on the table and knocked over the water. I knew I was supposed to say I'm sorry and offer to help clean it up, but I couldn't move. The water spread in a glossy puddle across the dark brown tabletop and started dripping onto the carpet, reminding me of something that made my stomach heave. But I couldn't focus on the right memory. A bunch of them rushed in and out of my mind. Every spill I had ever made and every punishment I had ever received. Smacks in the head, swats across the face with the wooden spoon, belt whippings and backhanded slaps. Dad responding spontaneously without feeling. The beatings coming, violent but impersonal and necessary, like cloudbursts. If Betty had ever been a witness, she would have agreed they were instinctual. She jumped up from her chair and tried wiping up the water with Kleenex that kept falling apart in her hand. I heard her tell me not to worry and not to go, but I found my legs again and ran. I ran all the way to my truck and screeched out of the lot. She followed me outside and stood next to the building, a young-eyed old lady holding a handful of soggy white strands of my guts. I was so rattled I almost forgot to stop at Yee's. I must have looked bad because Jack Yee's grin faltered, and he asked me if I wanted a glass of water. I laughed until I cried. For the first part of the drive home, I felt like puking. Everybody and his brother had a trash fire going in his yard since it was a nice night. The smell of burning plastic, grass clippings, and shitty diapers filled the truck along with the hot egg roll grease. A lot of people still had their trees and shrubs hung with Easter eggs. Some would keep them there until Halloween. Some people had started bringing out their lawn ornaments and would keep them there until hunting season, when they would have to take them back in again so they wouldn't get shot up. I saw a woman I didn't know by name but had been driving by all my life, polishing a peacock blue reflecting ball with a green rag. I waved, and she waved back. I noticed she had put her Virgin Mary out next to the bird bath, and behind some oversized yellow polka-dotted red mushrooms with two elves perched on top. Her Mary wasn't one of the gray stone statues everybody bought nowadays, the ones where she's staring at the ground like she's not worthy. This Mary was one of the old-fashioned plastic kind, dressed in sky blue, looking toward heaven, a slight smile on her painted pink lips. Those were Mom's favorites. She loved the colored robes and serene white faces. She had never seen one until the drive from Illinois after she lost her family, and she thought they were a sign from God that this was going to be a good place to live. She spent the whole drive through our valley counting Madonnas. I was completely calm again by the time I bounced over the final ruts in our road. My heartbeat had returned to normal. My hands were behaving. I could pick a thought and stick to it. I wasn't even bothered when I glanced down at the floor of the truck and noticed Mom and Dad's wedding picture had surfaced again through the latest layer of trash. I just put my boot on it and pushed it back under. When I pulled in the driveway, Elvis raised his head from where he was lying on the charbroiled couch. Once the worst of the burnt smell had disappeared, he had claimed it for his own. The girls hadn't made any mention of replacing the couch indoors. They had covered the living room floor with pillows and sat on those when they watched TV. Every once in a while, I got a point across. Misty didn't appear wordlessly on the porch waiting for her egg roll. Jody didn't come rushing out begging for her cookie and umbrella. I didn't think much of it until I had my hand on the front door handle. Then all of a sudden, I was absolutely certain they were all dead. Someone had gunned them down and put them in a pile in the middle of the living room where the couch had been. I couldn't tell one from the other until I noticed the eyes, open and vacant, staring out of surprised, bloody faces. Jody's gray eyes like Mom's, Misty's dark eyes like Dad's, Amber's blue eyes like mine. Then I knew who they were, who they had been. They weren't anybody anymore. They were a tangled heap of sticky red arms and legs and hair, lots of hair, gold and rust and brown. Elvis started growling. I hadn't seen him there. He had his muzzle low to the ground and his haunches in the air, his ears flattened against his head and his lips drawn back over his teeth. The black fur on his back stood straight up like the bristles on the brushes that used to brush all that hair. There was blood in his fur. Somehow I knew that he hadn't been shot. It was the girl's blood. He had been standing too close when the shooting started. So had I. He was growling at me. I looked down and saw blood spattered on my boots, on my jeans. In my hands, I saw Uncle Mike's gun. I dropped it, and the crash from it hitting the floor made me jump. I looked down again and saw the bag from Yee's sitting on the porch floor outside our front door. Elvis was growling at me, for real. "What's the matter, boy?" I asked shakily. He stopped growling immediately at the sound of my voice. He perked up his ears, cocked his head at me, and went trotting off with his tail waving. I bent down slowly and retrieved the bag and checked to make sure Jody's cookie hadn't cracked. Maybe one of these days I would ask Betty about these scenes that played out in my head. They were probably nothing, but sometimes they bothered me because they seemed real. Not the way dreams seemed real, but the way life seemed real. The only reason I'd bring them up to her would be on the chance there might be a cure for them, a pill I could take. Because, like I said, sometimes they bothered me. I opened the door. Normally I never announced my presence, but tonight I shouted, "Where is everyone?" Jody came running out of the kitchen, her eyes huge with excitement. "Where have you been?" she asked me. "Why are you so late? We couldn't wait any longer. We got too hungry." She paused to make a sound I had only ever heard little girls make. It was a sort of a cross between a shriek, a gasp, and a moan. "You didn't forget. Amber said you would forget. She said whatever it was that made you late would make you forget." She ran up to me, snatched the bag, and hugged my legs. I touched the top of her silky head. "You seem happy," she said, and took my hand. "I'm not," I assured her, and let her lead me into the kitchen. "Where have you been?" Amber bitched at me. "You could have called." "I haven't been anywhere," I said. "And why are you wearing a coat? Every guy I know is wearing shorts today, and you're stomping around in Sears work boots and a hunting jacket. I swear to God, you're a head case. I hope you're a head case. 'Cause if you're not, then you're just the biggest dork on the face of the earth." I took off Dad's coat and hung it over the back of my chair, not to please Amber, but because the kitchen was too warm. "It's better to be insane than unfashionable, is that what you're saying?" I asked, and reached for the buns. "You're so funny," she huffed. "You're wearing my shirt," I said. All three of them wore my t-shirts to sleep in. Half the time I got dressed by going through my sister's drawers. "Take it off," I finished, forgetting who I was talking to. She gave me a terrible grin, and before I could tell her to stop, she had stood up and was starting to pull it over her head. She had on only panties underneath, string bikini ones with butterflies on them. She had the shirt pulled up far enough that I couldn't see her face anymore, and for one guilt-free moment I stared dumbly at the tiny triangle of fabric where her thighs met, then the hips, the tummy, the curve of her rib cage before the welcome repulsion overtook me. I jumped up from my seat, grabbed her roughly by the arm, and pushed her back into her chair. "You said take it off," she yelled at me. "Where were you?" Misty asked. We both turned at the sound of her voice. She was chewing her egg roll with mechanical disinterest, holding it slightly away from her face with her elbow resting on the table. I noticed how the kitten collar didn't slide down her forearm anymore. It stayed tight on her wrist. "You're an hour late," she said to me. I looked at the clock on the microwave and forgot about Amber. Misty was right. "I don't get it," I said. "How can I be an hour late?" "Maybe you were abducted by aliens," Amber suggested snottily, "and they gave you some kind of drug to make you forget what happened. Too bad. Your first sexual experience and you won't be able to remember it." She laughed hysterically at herself. I didn't blame her for once. It was a smart insult for Amber. "Maybe you got lost," Jody said, opening her umbrella and twirling it between her fingers. "I needed another purple one," she said, smiling. She had about 600 purple ones. "I was hoping you'd finally decided to split permanently," Amber told me when she got done laughing. "Then I could get my license." I paused in the middle of fixing my hot dogs. It was my turn to laugh. "It's not funny, Harley," she fumed. "You can't stop me forever. I should just go ahead and borrow one of my friend's cars and get it. The only reason I haven't done it yet is because I know you won't let me get anywhere near the trucks, so what's the point? I thought the only reason you hadn't done it was because you know I'd kill you." "You don't have the guts to do anything to me. You just don't get it, do you?" "What don't I get?" I looked around the table. Mom and Dad's chairs were still here, one at each end. We hadn't bothered moving them somewhere else, just like we hadn't bothered cleaning out their room. That would have been too much acceptance. Misty sat directly across from me, still chewing. She watched me and Amber, back and forth, superior and patient, like she had already reached the end of our argument and was waiting for us to catch up. Jody was working on her list of things to do. Most of the instructions were short, except for a big one at the bottom I couldn't make out. "I can't afford it," I said slowly to Amber. "Which word don't you understand?" "I understood all of them," Jody said. Even if I was the greatest guy on the face of the earth who only cared about making you happy, I went on, I don't make enough money to give the good hands people $1,000. Do you understand me? Amber puckered her lips and blew air out her nose in frustration.
I don't get it, she said. How did Daddy do it?
Dad made good money.
Driving a cement mixer?
Yes, I cried.
Why can't you drive a cement mixer?
I can drive a cement mixer. I can't get a job driving a cement mixer. There's a big difference. I finally made out the last thing on Jody's list. Put tooth under my pillow.
Did you lose another tooth?
I asked, not very enthusiastically.
Yeah,
she said, and pointed out the hole in her smile.
I suppose you can't afford a quarter?
Amber sneered.
Harley doesn't pay for my teeth,
Jody assured us all.
The Tooth Fairy does, except I don't understand why the Tooth Fairy only gives me one quarter and gives Esme two quarters. Esme says it's because I use Aquafresh instead of Crest.
Speaking of Esme, Misty said to me, her mom brought you a present. Amber glared at her.
I wouldn't call it a present, she snorted at me.
What are you talking about? I asked.
She stopped by this afternoon and left you some recipes and a book, Amber explained, practically spitting the words recipe and book at me. Are you turning into a fag or something?
Something, I said.
What's a fag? Jody asked. I guess you might as well be a fag since you can't get a girl to make it with you.
What book? I asked.
A gigantic book,
Jody gushed before Amber could open her mouth again.
As big as a phone book.
About what?
The Art Institute of Chicago, Amber said in amazed disgust. There's a post-it note on top with the page numbers of some pictures Mrs. Mercer thought you'd like,
Misty offered indifferently. Amber shot her another outraged look.
Since when do you know anything about art? She asked me suspiciously.
I know a lot of shit you don't know I know.
Well, I'm sorry, she huffed. That's just too weird and gross. Mrs. Mercer bringing you recipes and an art book? It's like she thinks you're a woman or something.
Or something, I said again, and Jody laughed. I smiled at her.
Go ahead and laugh, Amber said, tossing her hair around. But that woman needs to get a life. I thought she was done coming around here. I can't believe the way she dresses.
I wasn't sure which comment to address first. I picked the one I was most interested in. What's wrong with the way she dresses? I've never seen her wear anything but jeans.
Yeah, but they're always way too tight for someone her age.
Her age?
You should have seen what she was wearing this time.
What was she wearing? I asked. She screwed up her face in disgust.
These low-rise pink denim shorts and a tie-dyed crop top. It was embarrassing.
You're just jealous because those are the shorts you wanted at Fashion Bug, Misty said.
Why was it embarrassing?
I asked, slowly chewing a mouthful of mac and cheese and picturing Callie Mercer in low-rise pink denim shorts and a tie-dyed crop top.
Because she's old. Women like that are so pathetic. Do they really think guys want to look at them after they hit 30?
Yeah, that poor Kim Basinger, I said. She's a real eyesore.
Who's Kim Basinger? Jody asked. You know what I mean, Amber said.
I finished eating. It took me about 10 seconds. I went and got a Coke out of the fridge and walked back to the table, but didn't sit down again. I was running late now. I took a couple long gulps from the can and belched.
I can't wait to see you in your 30s, Amber, I said.
You won't know me in my 30s. I'll be so out of here. You'll be living down the road in a trailer with 5 kids and no husband. She fixed me with an acid stare.
You know what, Harley? I was going to do you a big favor, and now you can go fuck yourself.
A favor? I laughed. The only favor you can do for me is get a job.
What if I knew someone who wanted to go out with you?
My mind jerked back to the book and the recipes and the pink shorts. I turned away from the table. I was sure my face was red.
I'm not interested, I said.
You don't even know who it is.
If it's someone you know, I'm not interested.
I started to walk away. I needed to change my clothes. I was going to be late for work. Amber jumped up from the table and ran around in front of me. What if I knew someone who wanted to... She paused and touched her upper lip with the tip of her tongue. Fuck you, she whispered. Get away from me. I'm serious. Get away. Ashley Brockway, her brother Dusty was in your class. She has a thing for you. I don't know why. How old is she?
My age?
16? Forget it. What's the big deal? You're only 19. I'm almost 20. So, she'll be 17 someday. Forget it. Where do you get off being so high and mighty? It's not like she's a kid. She is a kid. And what are you? The phone rang. I asked Misty to get it. Do you want to hear my fortune? Jody asked. Fine, Harley, Amber said, moving so close to me her nipples beneath my t-shirt were almost brushing against my chest. She wasn't wearing a bra. If I hadn't stopped her at the table when I did, she probably would have flashed me. It was a sight I desperately wanted to see and I desperately wanted to avoid seeing, like Dad inside his closed casket. Be that way, she said, narrowing her eyes into bright blue creases in her face. Just remember, beggars can't be choosers. That's what my fortune says, Jody squealed. Amber turned and walked off to the shower with her butt twitching under my shirt. That was Mrs. Shank, Misty said, coming back from the phone.
Who?
The Shanks. They live out past the Malones, before you get to the bridge. The people with the bird bath and the blue ball. Doug and Cruz ride our bus.
Who?
She said she saw you pull your truck off the road and just sit there for about an hour. She said she didn't want to bother you because you looked like you didn't want to be bothered, but she wanted to be sure you got home okay.
What?
You didn't have to lie about something like that, Misty said, sounding disappointed in me. She would have understood.
What?
I said again.
Who?
She walked out of the kitchen, too. I looked over at Jody, who was writing again. Suddenly, I couldn't figure out what I was supposed to do next. Sounds bombarded me. My sense of hearing became painfully keen. I heard the scratch of Jody's pencil on her list of things to do, and I knew she was writing, "Pray for Daddy's soul." I heard Misty punch a pillow as she settled down to watch TV, and I knew it was the flattened, musty denim blue one that Dad used to take on overnight hunting trips. I heard Elvis outside nudging his nose around his food bowl, and I knew he was still hungry. I heard the driving water splash against Amber's naked, soapy skin, and I knew where she was touching herself. I wished Betty could have had the same experience. Maybe then she would have understood why some questions should be left unanswered. I went to Amber's room and got out her yearbook. I looked up Ashley Brockway. She was not repulsive. Chapter 7. I couldn't remember the first time my dad hit me, but I remembered the first time he hit Amber. She was 3 years old and a major cramp in my lifestyle. I couldn't watch my He-Man cartoons around her because Mom said Skeletor was too scary. I got yelled at for leaving my Legos out because they were a choking hazard. I had to let her play with my Hot Wheels, but if I went anywhere near her kitchen set, I got my head smacked. There were plenty of times when I wanted to hit her myself, but I didn't because I didn't want to get hit, and the punishment for hitting was hitting. Dad hit her for knocking over his beer. 1 minute he was calmly watching TV on the couch. The next minute, his big hand shot out and clamped around her little arm, easy and familiar, like he was reaching for the can. He yanked her toward him, making her head snap back, and he hauled off and slapped her. The crack of his hard, grown-up hand meeting her soft baby cheek was the loudest sound I had ever heard, even louder than her screams. I watched the bewildered terror cloud her eyes, and I saw myself in them. Not my reflection, but proof of my existence, just the same. I knew Dad had destroyed her courage. Mom came rushing from the other room and stopped in the doorway to take in the scene. Then she stared at me, begging me for an answer I was too little to give her. I wanted her to leave him because he hurt us, but I needed for us to stay because we belonged to him. I was a kid and nothing seemed more unjust to me than somebody taking your stuff. Finally, she grabbed up Amber and left, murmuring things in her hair. That night, Amber had a bad dream. She came and crawled into bed with me instead of Mom and Dad. I couldn't get back to sleep with her snuggled up next to me. I lay there until dawn, thinking about Dad and feeling the same useless frustration I had felt the first time I had seen him piss on a sparkling white drift of pure new snow. Amber set up the date for me. I never talked to Ashley, and I never wanted to. I did want to put a part of my body inside her body, and I was willing to go hungry for a week so I could scrape together enough money to take her out and try and convince her to let me. But I didn't want to know anything about her. I didn't care what kind of music she liked, or if she loved her parents, or what she wanted to be when she grew up. Common sense should have told me that was a bad sign. I stayed awake the night before, staring at my light bulb in the dark, wondering if it was the last night I would lie there as a virgin.
I tried not to think about it too much because it was the exact same thing I had thought about the night before I screwed up with Brandy Crow.
But I couldn't stop myself. Excitement, dread, desire, disgust. I made myself sick with confusion. How could I feel opposite emotions for the same act? How could I feel so strongly about a girl I had never met? How could I want to love someone without getting personally involved? There was something evil about feeling that way, something too arrogant, even for humans. Eventually, I cleared my mind enough to sleep. My main concern was my sanity. I had begun to secretly cherish it lately, the way most guys did their hard-ons. I sorted out my feelings for Ashley a final time and strung them out in a nice, neat mental line. I didn't want her to talk. I didn't want her to judge or feel. But I did want her alive. I wanted her warm. Rick wouldn't give me Friday night off, but he said I could leave early. He asked me if I had a date. I said no, but that didn't stop him from telling the cashiers and Bud and Church that I did. On his way out the door at the beginning of our shift, he announced very loudly that I could help myself to a box of rubbers in the pharmacy section, free of charge, because that was the kind of guy he was. And he was right. That was exactly the kind of guy he was.
"Ignore him," Bud said to me. "He's just jealous 'cause even his own wife won't go near that fat ass."
The cashiers laughed. One of them said it was true. What else could explain their lack of children? Everyone knew his wife didn't have fertility problems, ever since she had that abdominal pain checked out last year.
"Didn't she have one of those laparoscope operations?"
another one asked.
The other one nodded. "They make a cut in your belly button and snake this tube down inside you with a laser and a little telescope on the end of it so they can see your ovaries. That's what my sister-in-law had done when she had her miscarriage."
"They wouldn't do that for a miscarriage," the third one broke in. "She would have a D and C to clean out her uterus."
"Is that the one where they suck out the stuff with the little vacuum, or the one where they scrape it out with a knife?"
A woman wheeled her cart up to one of the registers and the conversation ended, but the damage had already been done. Ashley's female parts had temporarily lost their mystical appeal. This wasn't the first time the cashiers had ruined women for me. They were like English teachers taking all the pleasure out of a perfectly good book by breaking it down into themes and sentence structure. Church got up from the bench to go bag, but paused, looking puzzled, and said,
"If it was going to rain, my mom would have told me. She always makes me wear my slicker."
I glanced up at him, but only for a second. Eye contact with Church was like seeing his soul through the wrong end of a telescope.
"She doesn't want me getting wet," he said.
"Right," I said.
"One time, I got sick from getting wet. I'm not kidding you."
"I believe you.
It's a red slicker. You've seen it."
"Right.
Yellow's for girls."
He suddenly barked a laugh and turned in Bud's direction.
"I don't care what you say, Bud," he cried, pointing at him. "Yellow's for girls. I don't care what you say."
Bud winked at me.
"But I always thought yellow was for girls, Church."
That sent Church into lurching hysterics.
"Shoot, you're funny, Bud,"
he said once he calmed down. He took off his glasses and pulled out a handkerchief from his baggy black pants to wipe at the tears in his eyes.
You and Harley, he said, shaking his head. You're funny.
He finished, carefully positioned his glasses back on his nose, and folded his handkerchief into a perfect square before cramming it back in his pocket.
I'd better call my mom and tell her to bring my slicker, and my rubbers, too. I got sick once from getting wet. I'm not kidding.
He walked off to the payphone by the ATM machine. Bud held his breath until he got out of earshot, then busted a gut laughing. My shift went smoothly and my thoughts gradually improved from the night before. Stocking shelves and fluorescent lighting usually had that effect on me. I tried looking on the bright side. I might actually like Ashley Brockway. Maybe she was mature for her age. And I had to keep reminding myself she liked me, or thought she did. And for girls, thinking they liked a guy was just as important as actually liking him. I finished unpacking 8 boxes of toaster strudels, closed the freezer door, and stepped back to take a look at myself in the glass. There was nothing wrong with me, no glaring errors, but there was nothing incredibly right about me either. My hair wasn't any definable color. People called it brown and strawberry blonde and even auburn. Jody once told me it was the color of a pile of raked up leaves. My eyes were blue, but not a startling gas flame blue like Amber's. When I was a kid, I used to think they looked like blue construction paper when it got wet. And I used to think that was good. I had an okay body. I didn't pump iron, and except for some amazing midlife crisis, I never would. But heavy lifting was one of my vocations, so I had strong arms and a good chest. Dad probably knew what he was doing, thinking I could have been a football player. Admiring my adequateness got me all fired up. I went straight from the freezer section to the pharmacy. The prescription counter had closed at 8 and no one was around. I grabbed a box of condoms. The sight of it in my hand made all my concerns about Ashley fly right out of my head. She could still have her baby teeth for all I cared. I stuck the box in my pants pocket. I only had 15 minutes left on my shift. Rick wasn't around to make me work them, so I decided to go change out of my ShopRite clothes early. I headed for the storeroom, dragging my dolly behind me, and had to pass by the produce section. I stopped in front of the bananas. I had practiced putting rubbers on countless bananas ever since the night with Brandy Crow, when I had unrolled one before trying to put it on, and I did try to put it on. A little thing like that wasn't going to stop me. Unfortunately, Brandy didn't try to stop me either. At the time, I thought that meant she was as inexperienced as I was, but it turned out she was just stupid and horny and cruel. She told me I could go ahead and do it anyway, even though the thing was barely on, and so full of air it looked like a balloon some clown might twist into a wiener dog at a kid's birthday party. I tried, and I think I achieved about a half inch of penetration with my dick feeling nothing but inflated latex. Then the rubber fell off. At that point, I was willing to risk pregnancy, disease, and even death. But Brandy put a stop to everything, including the alternatives I suggested that couldn't result in pregnancy. I knew right then she didn't love me like she had been saying ever since she let me unfasten her bra. If she had loved me, she would have wanted to put me out of my misery the way a tortured wife gives a cancer-racked husband a suicide dose of pills. A mercy handjob, that's all I was looking for. I wasn't going to let any of that happen again. Practice made perfect, and I had some time. I eyed the bananas, but grabbed a good-sized cucumber instead. My optimism was running at an all-time high. I put it in my pocket along with the box of rubbers, made a wide berth around the artichokes, and wandered toward the meat and seafood counters. We were having a sale on salmon fillets, $4.99 a pound. Jody loved salmon. Not the taste. None of us had ever eaten it. She loved the shiny silver scales. I remembered her when she was really little, sitting in the front of the cart pointing at the bright pinkish orange and silver layers stacked on ice chips in the display case and babbling baby talk. Mom would smile and tell her it was too rich for our blood and try and get her interested in a slab of something colorless or the trout and catfish with their eyes still in their heads. It never worked. And Mom would end up laughing and telling Jody how she hoped she would always stick to her convictions like that, how she might grow up to be a Supreme Court judge. I could see it now, a copy of Jody's first decision from the bench stuck to a prison cafeteria wall with tapioca. Sometimes I wished Mom would get that lethal injection. She'd make a better ghost than a spectator.
"Hi, Harley," a female voice said. My heart jumped. My head was crammed full of women. Mom, Jody, Ashley,
Brandy, the cashier's sister-in-law with her scraped-out uterus. It could have been any one of them, and I wasn't prepared.
Callie Mercer came up beside me. She was wearing the pink shorts, but not the crop top. She had on a t-shirt instructing the world to save the tigers.
"Hi,"
she said again.
"Hi,"
I said back. She gave me a funny look, then a smile crept onto her lips. She tilted her head and glanced at me from the corner of her eyes.
"Is that a cucumber in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me?"
"Huh?"
"I'm sorry," she laughed. "I had to say that. There's a cucumber in your pocket."
I looked down, panicked, forgetting if I had put the rubber on it or not.
"I found it on a shelf," I explained in a hurry. "I was just putting it back."
"What else would you be doing with it?" she said.
"Right," I said.
"So, how are you?" she asked with a throaty hopefulness that made me think of random destinations on long, lean, gray highways.
"Fine."
"I stopped up at your house last week. Did Amber tell you?"
"Yeah."
"I wasn't sure she would. I don't think she likes me very much."
"Why?" I asked. "Did she say something to you?"
"Let's just say she wasn't very hospitable. It's not a big deal. I don't blame her for thinking I was snooping around."
"Snooping around? Is that what she said?"
"Don't worry about it, Harley."
She started to reach out her hand to touch me, but stopped.
"It's okay. I understand. It must be very hard to deal with people sometimes after..."
She struggled to find the least alarming words.
"After what happened."
"No, you're wrong," I answered sharply.
"What happened doesn't give us an excuse to act any way we want. It's not an excuse for anything."
"Well, let's just forget about it."
She stared into the display case, checking out the salmon. They probably had it once a week, sale or no sale. She probably had some remarkable marinade she would write down for me if I asked. I could smell that night's dinner in her hair and on her hands. Ginger, garlic, and brown sugar. Then I realized she was staring at her reflection in the glass. She studied it, confused and irritated, like she had been handed a bunch of parts and instructions in a foreign language.
"Thanks," I thought to tell her, "for the stuff you brought."
She turned back around.
"Did you look through the book at all?"
"Yeah, I checked out that Pierre Bonnard painting, Earthly Paradise. They were supposed to be Adam and Eve, right?"
"Right. What did you think?"
"It was pretty accurate," I thought. Eve stretched out, sleeping in the woods like she wasn't worried about anything. Adam standing at the edge of the woods looking like he's trying to figure out where to build a house.
"Why do you say that's accurate?" she laughed.
"I don't know. I guess because women seem better at accepting things the way they are and dealing with shit, while men are always trying to figure out ways to change things, and when they can't, they get pissed."
She watched me like she wanted more.
I searched my brain for something else I could offer her. "Like in the Garden of Eden," I went on. "I always felt like, even after Eve became enlightened and realized she was naked, she would have been fine with it. Adam was the one who got embarrassed and couldn't deal with it."
She smiled deeply and gave me a familiar, sparkling appraisal with her dark eyes. I pictured her giving the same look to her husband and him totally missing it and giving her a dry peck on the cheek on his way out the door for his night with the boys.
"A lot of people think that's one of the things Bonnard was trying to show in his painting," she said. "That Eve reveled in her natural state while Adam became awkwardly aware of his nakedness. He's standing alone because his consciousness has separated him from her." She paused.
"I'd be curious to know who you think was to blame for their fall from grace. Adam or Eve?" she asked, kind of joking.
"Both," I said with a nod of my head. "They were both selfish."
"Selfish?"
"I always felt like that's why God wanted rid of them. Not because they broke a rule, because they turned on each other. I bet they could have smoothed things over if they had just gone to him and admitted they were both stupid instead of trying to blame it on each other. If he thought they loved each other, God probably would have given them a second chance instead of damning the entire human race for all eternity. She was smiling at me again. I glanced down at the cucumber sticking out of my pocket. So what does your husband do on his night out? I asked it kind of snotty. There was a part of me that didn't care about offending her. What would it matter? She was as much a fantasy as a lingerie model. The only difference was I could smell her, and I knew where she lived. The question was absolutely none of my business, and I half expected her to tell me, but she answered me. I don't know, she said, fanning her fingers in the air. He has a couple friends from work he goes out with. They went through a racquetball phase a couple years ago, then a basketball phase. I didn't mind those so much because at least he was getting exercise. Now I think they just sit in the country club for hours on end complaining about how their wives and kids make so many demands on them and how they can't golf at night. She stopped, bit her lower lip, and spit it out like it tasted bad. That didn't sound too bitchy, did it? No, I said. She put her index finger lightly on her lips. She seemed to like the taste of it better because she slipped the tip in her mouth and started lightly chewing on the nail. What would you rather be doing on your night out? I asked her, besides grocery shopping. Besides grocery shopping? She said, giving me a sly smile around the finger before hooking it into an empty belt loop in her shorts. That's a tough one. Well, I suppose on a warm, clear night like tonight, I'd take a book and a blanket and a couple beers and go to this clearing behind my house on the other side of the railroad tracks. It's this huge open field surrounded by trees, about a mile up the hill. You feel like you're in a completely secluded world up there. I bet tonight it's as bright as day with that big full moon. You'd take beer? I asked. She nodded. Not a bottle of wine? I like beer. I kind of had you pegged for a wine drinker. She laughed. Somehow I don't think that's a compliment. Why can't you do that? I wondered. Go read in the woods. I suppose I could if I lobbied hard enough. It's just not worth it. Her face fell, and her mood with it. Well, I should let you put your cucumber away. By the way, she started as she positioned her cart to leave. What happened to your couch? I thought about it for a moment. It caught on fire? My God, you're lucky the whole house didn't burn down. Was someone smoking on it? Yeah, one of Amber's friends. Thank God you were home. Yeah, thank God. Well, I'll see you around. She started to go. I'm sorry about Amber, I called after her. I'll have a talk with her. No. She stopped dead in her tracks and shook her head at me. Please don't. It's okay, really. I waited for the pink shorts to make a turn down the cereal aisle and went and put back the cucumber. I didn't want Callie Mercer or anyone else cutting Amber slack because our family had experienced a tragedy. People were always making excuses for stupidity and a lack of basic decency. They were always looking for someone else to blame. Mom's lawyer blamed Dad for his own murder. He practically came out and said he deserved it for beating us kids. He painted Mom as the ultimate martyr who sacrificed her freedom to save her children. But anyone looking at Mom sitting stunned and dry-eyed staring at her wedding ring knew even she didn't buy it. The lawyer purposely left out some very important facts, like Dad married Mom when she got pregnant instead of running out on her, and he worked hard every day of their married life to provide for us. He didn't talk about the physical stimuli that shaped Dad's world. How he didn't like his job, but he went to it every day. How he didn't like to shave, but Mom couldn't stand stubble. How he didn't like Bill Clinton, but he had to vote for him anyway. He wasn't a monster. He was a flesh and blood man who couldn't stand it if he spilled something. I tried explaining these things my day on the witness stand, but the judge kept telling me to stick to the questions. Even the prosecutor, whose job it was to convict Mom, wasn't interested in making Dad look good so Mom would look worse. He didn't care at all about the individuals involved. He latched on to the big philosophical questions. Is it ever right to take the law into your own hands
and what happens to the fabric of society when we do? I thought he was crazy trying that argument with a jury box full of people who all had gun cases in their living rooms instead of bookcases. But I had forgotten the reason they did was because they loved killing, not just their own kind.
The prosecutor hadn't forgotten. He twisted his line of reasoning into a big knot of paranoia.
Where do you draw the line? If it's okay to shoot him for beating the kids, is it okay to shoot him for staying out too late drinking? Today, it's a wife shooting her husband for beating the kids. Tomorrow, it's a stranger shooting you in your car because he doesn't like your bumper sticker. By the time he was done, everyone in the courtroom believed freeing my mother would be signing their own death warrants.
My good jeans and a clean blue t-shirt were waiting for me in the storeroom.
I changed my clothes behind a stack of Heinz ketchup boxes, put on my cap, and transferred my box of condoms. Callie was already checking out when I strolled up front. I hung back and watched. She was chatting up a storm with Bud. He knew everybody, but he seemed to know her on a personal level. I waited until she left. I hadn't been planning on talking to anybody on my way out, but I had to walk past all of them to get to the doors anyway. I slowed down as I neared Bud. He blew a bubble at me.
Ready for your big date?
I guess so.
Where are you going?
Movie.
That's a good idea, Harley,
Church commented. I stepped up closer to Bud. I didn't want the cashiers hearing me mention Callie and launching into the history of her reproductive organs.
How do you know her? I asked him.
Who?
He said.
Callie Mercer? I used to work with her. She buys too much peanut butter,
Church volunteered.
I told her so. I'm not kidding.
Where?
I asked Bud.
At the Gazette. She used to work there summers when she came home from school.
You used to write for the newspaper?
Don't look so amazed, he told me, popping his gum. Writing for it's only slightly more impressive than being able to read it.
Peanut butter's full of fat, Church said.
People don't believe you when you tell them, but it's true. Just like olives, full of fat. People never believe me when I tell them.
Why'd you quit?
Well, one day I was going through my clips and realized the most important story I had ever written was Man Dressed in Groundhog Suit Assaulted.
Was that the Roebuck boy who got jumped up in Punxy during Groundhog Days?
One of the cashiers asked. My attempt at being discreet hadn't worked.
Up on Gobbler's Knob, wasn't it? Another cashier chipped in.
He was the groundhog who worked the crowd in town. The other one worked the mall, but he didn't have the big top hat.
Yeah, that's the one,
Bud said. They caught the guys who beat him up. I still remember the quote they gave me. We got that damned groundhog.
So you quit because you got disgusted? I said.
I quit because they made me. Mandatory retirement. But I like to think I would have quit anyway.
Why'd Callie quit? I asked. Because she had kids?
Well, let's see. She worked there summers during college.
He paused and brought an age-spotted hand to his chin and rubbed it thoughtfully.
And then she worked there for a couple years after she came back here to live permanently. Yeah, I guess she did stop after she got married and started having kids.
Why would she want to come back here and live? I wondered. Doesn't seem like she'd want to.
Why do you say that?
She seems different, that's all.
I don't know, Bud said. You might be confusing different with dissatisfied.
Church stepped up between us.
She buys too much peanut butter, he gaped. She doesn't even buy it for her kids. She buys it for herself. I'm not kidding. She told me she likes it.
He shook his head.
It's full of fat. I told her so.
If she grew up here, I went on, ignoring Church, she had to know what this place was all about. She had to know she'd be dissatisfied with it. Why would she stay?
I'm pretty sure it was simply a case of love.
For her husband? I asked, feeling a pang of disgust at the question.
For her grandpa, Bud answered me. She came back to take care of him after he had his first heart attack.
He lived for another year, then had the big one that killed him. She inherited his land and stayed on it.
She must have really loved him. Bud nodded.
Callie's a little intense. When I worked with her, I always felt like she was being pulled in 100 different directions. Her grandpa was sort of her compass from what I could tell. Once he passed on...
He paused and tapped his temple with his finger.
Her needle started spinning, if you know what I mean. I think she stayed on his land hoping to find some peace.
Did he give her the land before she got married?
Bud stopped and gave me a searching look.
I don't think I've ever heard you talk so much. Getting all keyed up about your date, huh?
Did he? I asked again.
I think so.
Why'd she get married then?
Well, I can't say for sure, but I don't think land ownership factored into it one way or the other.
I'm just saying if she had all that land and a job, she wouldn't have to get married.
Here you go again. Who said she had to get married? I imagine she loved the guy.
You got something against Brad Mercer?
I don't even know him.
I lost interest in the conversation once her husband came back into it. I was going to be late for my date anyway. I said goodnight to everybody and started for the door. I was standing on the mat when I heard Church yell at the top of his lungs,
"Harley, my mom says you won't need any rubbers tonight."
The door slid open and I got out of there as fast as I could, their laughter ringing in my ears. I was supposed to meet Ashley at the fountain in the middle of the mall. I hadn't given much thought to why she wanted to meet me instead of making me pick her up, but as soon as I turned the corner past the fabric store and heard girls laughing, I knew. I would have left, but one of them spotted me and whispered to Ashley. She looked over and waved and went back to her girlfriends. They whispered and laughed some more, then eyed me up and down with leering, smirking smiles. Ashley had snagged herself an older guy, a real man who paid taxes and bought his own underwear. She didn't like me. She didn't want to know me any more than I wanted to know her. She just wanted to show me off to her friends. I deserved it, considering the reason I was there. I couldn't think of a more even exchange, my dignity for her pussy. She slid off the bricks surrounding the fountain and walked over to me. I couldn't take my eyes off her. There were certain things you couldn't tell from a yearbook picture.
"Hi, Harley," she said.
"Hi," I said back.
"I hope I'm not late."
"I don't care," she said. She stepped up in front of me and stood perfectly still like an offering.
"I mean, I don't want us to be late for the movie," I explained.
"I don't care," she said again. "I've seen it."
"You want to see something else?"
She waved her hand in the air, then slipped it into one of mine.
"I've seen them all," she said, and started leading me to the fountain to introduce me to her friends.
There were four of them, but they were interchangeable. Same fluffy hair, same doe-eyed makeup and berry brown lipstick, same clingy halter tops and fringe cutoffs and stack-heeled sandals. I looked at them sprawled on the brick around the fountain, the bare legs and bellies and throats begging to be handled. It should have been a crime. Premeditated arousal. I should have been able to call security and have them dragged off, all except Ashley, who I wanted to keep for myself.
It turned out she didn't talk much.
She flashed me a lot of adoring looks and kept reaching down to adjust her sandal buckle after we took our seats in the theater. Each time she did, her halter top pulled away from her shorts, and I glimpsed the start of a shadow at the base of her spine. I wanted to kiss that spot more than I wanted to kiss her lips. The movie was lost on me. I couldn't have cared less about a bunch of screaming teenagers getting ominous letters and finding dead bodies in the trunks of their cars. Ashley had claimed she'd already seen it, but that didn't stop her from being terrified. She grabbed my arm whenever something scary happened. She had become permanently latched there by the time the credits rolled. I barely noticed her. I was thinking about how much money I had spent on a lame movie and popcorn and Cokes. Being the breadwinner took the joy out of a lot of things. We left the theater holding hands. Ashley kept looking around for anyone she knew. In the parking lot, she headed straight for my truck.
I couldn't figure out how she recognized it.
If she had ever been over to our house, it was while I was at work. Then I remembered that sometimes the cars and trucks that dropped off Amber in the middle of the night were full of girls.
I got a strange feeling imagining Ashley walking past my truck in the dark, slowly dragging her fingertips across the dirty hood, and thinking about me while I was asleep not 30 feet away in my ratty underwear.
I liked her thinking about me, as long as she didn't know me. But I didn't like her touching the truck. I opened the door for her and watched her crawl inside. "You want to get some pizza or something?" I asked her after I got in too.
"You don't have to do that," she said.
What she meant was, "I know you don't have any money." I must have let my anger show because she quickly added, "I'm not hungry."